I'm Paul Bates with GreatDad.com, here with my weekly podcast, Talking to Dads. And a little bit recently, I started talking to fathers who are a little bit older, who are facing or who have already faced empty nesting. And today I've got a really interesting guest who I'm hoping is going to give us some tips on part of the puzzle of finding meaning after 55, after the kids are gone, near the tail end of your career. So welcome, Ron Macklin.
Well, thank you, Paul. Pleasure to be here. And thank you for coming.
In general, you're not, unlike a lot of my guests, you're not specifically focused on dads or even focused on late life. But what you are is you've developed a strategy or a program for relationships and how to use relationships to develop networks. And since that is such a huge factor for aging men, a lot of men don't have real relationships that go into later life, and they quite often find themselves very lonely in later life, whether intentionally or unintentionally. So that's what I'd love to get your feelings about. And you are in our cohort. Can you tell me a little bit if I've got some things here that are relevant to our audience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks. So first of all, I'll give you a little description of like why I have this methodology that I created. When I was growing up, like out of college, but into the working world, like the world hands you a network. Like I said, you have a job, here's your network. You have kids, here's your network, right? And it all comes to you and you go, oh, there's these people, they got the same concerns I have. And we just do these things together, right? And then I had this story where I went, but there's that marketing guy. How do I get to know the marketing or the finance guy or this other customer or this other, and all these other people I wanted to meet, but like they were busy. They had things to do and I was busy and I was going like, how do I get to talk to them? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just, how do I talk with them? How do I build trust with them so that I can actually call them up or the phone rings and they look down back in the day when caller ID was coming out, right? Look down and go, oh, look, it's Ron. Sure. I'll answer that call. Right. And how do I build that trust, that space with them? So I have a connection that when I call, they answer, or when they call in, I go, oh, I know Paul. Let's get on the phone and talk, right? That was the fundamental of why I built it. And I didn't build it to become a business later on. I didn't build it so that later on in life, when all those businesses and kids went away, right? I built it because I was trying to be able to build those connections to live a good life. Mm-hmm. I had responsibilities, like how to take care of myself, how to take care of my wife or produce space for my wife to be able to take care of herself and be with me. And then we had three kids that we had to get to a certain point and then give them space and then let them go out and be in the world. And like, we had to be able to build those networks to be able to do all that. I had those commitments ready to go. And I had to be able to do something to take care of that. Like, it was my commitment. And wow, did I try some stuff that really upset people. Like it was, I mean, like, I apologize to those out there who I did this with early, right? Because I didn't know what I was doing. And I tried with other people. I said, well, how do you build a network of people you can deal with? How do you build connections, right? And they go, well, you just have them. I go, no, this is the work. Like, so, no, tell me how you do it. And they'd tell me what they would do. And I would try that. And that didn't work, right? Mm-hmm. So what I found was, first thing I had to do, I had to work on myself. Mm-hmm. Like, what is my stand for who I am in the world? What will I do? What won't I do? What might I do? And people can kind of get messed up on the whole might thing. Like, what do you mean might? Well, you know, one of my favorites, I might lie. I mean, that's part of my stand. I might lie, right? And people are like, oh, so if like you have a birthday party and you surprise one and you're not going to tell anybody, you'll lie about that. And I go, that's one, but there's other ones. Like, I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to be honest 100% of the time. I may lie to you. I may not. It's just like, to live in our society, we'd have to do that. So then I had to go through and look at, what is my stand? And when I started putting together my stand, there was nine things. Like there was nine things. And I thought, man, that's a lot. My currently, my stand, like what I will do, won't do, might do, it's up around 35, 40 things. Wow. And it comes in and goes out, and I modify and I combine and I do things, right? But I start to look at, who am I? Because if somebody wants to build a relationship with me, who are they going to build it with? And I had to know who I was and what, mm-hmm, I was up to and what I was after. And some of that is like, you don't really know what your stand is until life punches you in the mouth. It's a great Mike Tyson quote. Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face, right? And I go, got it. So when you lose a child, right? You get fired when you lose your spouse or you get divorced. All those things are punches in the face, right? And then you get to find out right then and there in that moment what you will do, what you won't do, and what you might do.
Yeah.
And so now that's step one. The second one is like how to be with the other person to where you're not telling them what to do. You're not like leading them to something like going like, well, I'll just jelly bean you down the road and you'll get to that spot. Right. And everybody goes, he's jelly beaning me. I can tell. I have to follow this. I'm not going there. Right. All of those things trigger what I call the shields. You do those things that look inauthentic or look like you're trying to manipulate or sell or all those things. Shields come up. Right. And the shield is just a story we have in our head that actually protects you. Like it protects you. Right. And shields can be weapons too. If you take a shield, you can beat somebody over the head with it. And you can use those shields, those stories, and just stories to protect you from that space. Mm-hmm. So to be authentic, to be real, to care about the other person, like, and then ask questions about what they're doing. Right. And a lot of times you bump into somebody and you're trying to build a relationship with them and they've got their shields up. Right. They don't want to get to know you because they don't know who you are.
No, you see that all the time where people don't want to be too vulnerable because they're afraid that you're going to get one up on them and take advantage of them.
That's when you become vulnerable with them.
Yeah.
When you can open up and share a vulnerable story, and you got to be careful with the vulnerable stories because a lot of people start out by telling a vulnerable story. They go, well, I did this and it looks really vulnerable. And then it all turned out really good. And it was all fine. It was all fine. It was good. Like, look at me. I was a hero at the end of that. And I'm going like, no, that's not a vulnerable story. That's a look at me story. A vulnerable story says, this is where it screwed up. And this is how I got fired or I lost something or it didn't get there. And this is what I learned.
Yeah.
And then as people go, oh yeah, I do that too. That's me. And now you're no longer talking to their shields. You're actually in what I call a linguistic dance. You're dancing with the other person in language, right? Mm-hmm. And you're being authentic with each other. You're being real. And that's the beginning of the space when they start to say, I call it the imaginal moment. When they start to go like, tell me more. Or they go, that's me. I've done that.
Yeah.
We're all pretty much the same. As humans, we're all pretty much the same. It doesn't matter what the religion or race or history, and I've lived in Europe and worked all over Northern Hemisphere, and people all have the same kind of cares. Like they care about, shelter and food and family and their career and what they're going to do when they can't work anymore. These are things everybody cares about.
Yeah, the human condition.
And no matter who you are, right, that you care about that, and you can start to build a relationship, a connection, when you can talk about that stuff. Right. And then once they drop their shield, once they've started to ask questions, and we call it imaginal moment because there's when a caterpillar is moving through life, and then there's a cell inside of them called the imaginal cell. And that imaginal cell triggers the whole metamorphosis process. So that cocoon starts to be formed, and then it completely transforms into a butterfly or whatever kind of moth or whatever it is. Right. And those imaginal cells, we have something more powerful than the imaginal cells. We have stories. We have stories we can tell ourselves. We have stories we can make about other people. When you see somebody say, God, that's me. I've done that. I've done that. Or tell me more about that. Or like, so what did you do next? Or how did you recover from that? Or like they start to get curious.
Is that almost like promoting empathy or like eliciting empathy or
it is,
or is that too forceful?
You could use those words.
Yeah.
Right. The empathy can get people kind of messed up on things. What do I do with that? I don't know. Empathy. What does that mean? Right. Let me get my dictionary out and look up empathy. wait. No, is empathy sympathy? And what's the difference between empathy and sympathy? And I go, no. Let's get language that works with everybody we're talking to. And so then there's a place where now it's just two humans. And you can, like, the first time I did this was on an airplane with somebody, and we started talking about something that, like, you would have never guessed you'd talk about on the airplane. Real stuff. It mattered. It was about the future of their lives, whether they wanted to have kids or not have kids, whether they wanted to get married or not get married. And we were just in, like, things that really mattered to us. And I found that everybody I work with and everybody I've been around and all the people I've met in this world, they all care about the same kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's that, that's like the first three steps. Like, you're looking for, like, one, who are you going to be and be that? Two, when you're talking to somebody, be curious, ask questions, right? Be in a place to learn about them, be interested instead of interesting,
right?
In their space. And then when you begin to notice, like, either share a vulnerable story or they begin to get curious and ask questions, they're in a space of they're dropping their shields down and they want to learn about you because you're learning about them. Now they want to learn about you. And now this is open space to work with each other.
Hmm.
And that's the first three steps. You're looking for that space of what did they create? Like, what are they working on? What are you working on? And now you're just two humans. And it's a great place to open up to work on from there. There's other steps after that, like how to offer a place to work on something. And then also there's a space where this is, we're humans, right? Every now and then our shields come back up and people will, like, we call it bucking. Like a horse would buck off a rider trying to get rid of something. People will buck and to be peaceful while they're doing that. Not to get, when they start to push you away a little bit, it's just normal. That's just them being their normal scared self. That's just what they do. The last step is allow people to contribute to you. And it's the hardest step because everybody wants to help somebody else, but we're all uncomfortable accepting help from somebody else.
Yeah.
So what are we like? Everybody's helping that one guy in North Dakota, right? Like, there's got to be a place where we learn to accept help easily and openly. And that doesn't mean accept help like, okay, so you do it the way I want you to do it, exactly like I want you to do it, when I want you to do it, and that'll be the help I'll accept. No. To let them actually contribute, to create something, to add something to you when they're ready to do it. Because we all look for in life some place we can contribute.
Yeah, in our own way, right?
I mean, in our own way.
In our authentic way, not something I demand of you, but it's something you give freely because you know it'll give you pleasure to give too.
Well, it gives me pleasure to give. I get to create. We get to contribute to somebody, right? And that's a great number one reason people leave a job is because they can't contribute to the company, right? The same thing is true in a relationship. Number one reason people won't develop a relationship is because they can't contribute to it. They don't feel like they belong in it. Mm-hmm. And so they go away.
Yeah.
And these are the methods I developed for myself to be able to build those relationships with people. And as we were doing this, like learning these skills, and I'm just doing it for myself, trying to figure it out. And then all of a sudden it was like, somebody goes, how do you do that? What do you mean how I do it? No, you have a great network. You know, people, you're connected to people, you know, all these other stuff. How do you do that? And I tried to tell them, I just told them, right. And you know, people don't like to be told what to do. It's a strange thing, but we don't like to be told what to do. And when I started to shift from telling them to giving them space to discover it, like think about this, like, who are you? What are you up to? What are you trying to produce? Right? What is that space in your life that you love? And they start to talk about it and I go, okay, that's your stand. And he goes, is that permanent? No, mine's different. I mean, the stand of a 20-year-old is not the same as a stand for a 60-year-old. It's not three 20-year-old stands equals a 60-year-old stand. It's my life has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
So our stand changes. And when they start to develop that story, now they know who they are and they're comfortable with that. They can start to connect to the other person.
And this is really quite different for men later on in life, because a lot of these techniques, or some of the techniques I can understand from a business standpoint to some degree, but usually early on in your career, mid-career, you're usually sizing somebody up for what they can do for you, and you're pretending to be somebody you're not because you want to look like you're in authority, and you're not looking for real deep personal connection. You're looking for more transactional connection. So these are really excellent skills for, well, anybody for, and how to communicate with other human beings, but especially this group of men, older men who are suddenly having to change their way of interacting, because now they can finally, for the first time, maybe be who they really are and be where they stand.
I'd say, Paul, about half, maybe even a little more than half other people that go through our programs come back in and they'll say, I have a relationship with my mother. I have a relationship with my son. I have a relationship with my brother, my father, my parents, my, like, wow. I go, huh, I didn't anticipate that. Like I was teaching and creating this place as a professional's course, right? And most people use it with their family. Mm-hmm. How to build a connection with their family, how to build a connection with their neighbors, how to build connections with other people that are not in a part of their business. Because those are the networks that once you retire or you quit working or your kids move on, all of those networks and all those people, they go away. And then it's like now you're somewhere between 59 and 72 and you go, okay, now what? And you go like, well, all those people you used to hang out with, they're gone.
Yeah.
All those people you used to have conversations with and work on projects with and do stuff with, they're gone.
Yeah.
How do you build another relationship? Well, it takes a skill to do that.
Yeah.
It's an important skill to build if you want to have people to talk to.
Uh-huh.
And we as humans, what is the worst punishment you can give a human?
Pick them in a box without any kind of
input. Solitary.
Yeah.
Solitary confinement. That is the harshest punishment we know.
Yeah.
Right. So we don't do well alone. When we have people to talk to and be around, we do pretty good.
So how is there any advice you have or anything in your learning? Because I'm just wondering, like in business networking, you're usually sizing up other people. Like I got Ron's name off of a list of people who do X, and I'm going to sell this, or I'm going to connect with him because he's my soccer, or you know, his father of a soccer person. You know, there's some reason to get a hold of you. Whereas we're talking more about somebody like I meet you, I don't know, in a bar, or I meet you at a cocktail reception or something, and I just am attracted to you because of our conversation, and we decide to have a more meaningful conversation. That's a different type of relationship. And how do you, you think it's kind of like, I mean, does it go back to like just figuring out where you have common interests or hobbies? Nope. Nope. Yeah, what's the magic sauce?
No,
and
no.
Like, what people you're drawn to?
So, Paul, first I'd say it's not different. Building a relationship at work or building a relationship with somebody at a grocery store or the somebody at a barbershop or somebody at a drugstore or somebody who you met at church or wherever you are, right? Mm-hmm. It's not any different. Mm-hmm. There's two humans. They have stories in their head. They have fears. They need somebody to connect to. It's a fundamentally the same wherever you go. And the biggest challenge that people have is they're afraid and they think there's something wrong with them that they're afraid. Because they don't think anybody else is afraid. Yeah. Have you been to Facebook page? Everybody's life looks perfect. Well, I mean, gosh, how come everybody else's life is so perfect and mine sucks? I can't get myself to work out. No, when I go to Facebook, what do I make mine look like? Oh, look at my picture of my vacation. Look at my picture of my kids being successful. Look at my kids. And the reality is we're all afraid.
Yeah,
we all need connections. And when you can actually talk to somebody who knows you're afraid and you know they're afraid, you can start to do some amazing stuff.
But I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you go out with somebody you've met at a cocktail party or something. They said, let's get together for a coffee. And you get together with them with a coffee and you realize that they were a president of a company or they're, you know, they wrote a book. You know, they've got some of these crazy credentials and they turn to you and they say, well, you know, what's going on in your life? And suddenly you feel like, God, I don't even, you know, why did this guy even call me up? Is he going to try to sell me life insurance? You know, you don't know why, because you're like, I'm not worthy of even being with this person. And yet they for some reason, they wanted to talk to you. What do you think that's all about? That sounds like it's what you're saying is that you're, mm-hmm. you have this fear that you're not.
I've worked with and worked around a lot of people that I hold as powerful. Like they have good lives. They're successful. They've started businesses. They've sold businesses. They've done all this stuff. I've met a lot of the folks. And some people are, you know, worth hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And they all talk about their fears. Mm-hmm. The more powerful they are, the more they talk about their own fears. And they're looking for help. and they don't know where they're going to find the help. Like, they don't go, well, there's Paul Ness. He's no help. They go, oh no, Paul, he seemed like a nice guy. I had a good conversation. Let's have another conversation. And sometimes the help they're looking for is just not to feel alone.
Right.
To feel connected to somebody else in the world. And they also, powerful people, right, who are being successful in life. I don't mean like they have all the money. Like, they're happy. They're connected. They also look out and say, everybody's got a gift. I don't know what Paul's is. I don't know what Ron's is. Let's go find out.
Right.
There might be something I can learn over there. I know this. If I don't talk to him, I will not learn it. And they're looking for help. Even if it's just a simple help of, so what do you do? What's your passion? What are you up to?
Yeah.
And then they go like, you know, I could connect you with this other person over here. And you guys may have another conversation. This could be a great place. And I've been looking for somebody. I've had this happen so many times. I go, I've been looking for a guy like you. I've been looking for that very thing that you are. Yeah. And I was going like, yeah, but see, my scared self, all that internal fear, it made you unapproachable. So I didn't want to go over and talk to you because you look unapproachable.
So would you go into a conversation looking for that gift, or using your techniques and thinking the gift will probably appear because of the shared vulnerability and the.
So I do know that the gift is there. I don't know that they know that that's the gift I'm looking for, whatever that is. Like, they go in there and go, well, I'm just Ron, and I just be here having a conversation at a coffee shop, right? And then we start to be vulnerable and open. All of a sudden you go, I've got something for you. And I go, cool, let's talk about it, right? And then I go, and I share something, goes, ooh, that's what I was looking for. And if we don't have those conversations, we'll never know what they are. But I'd say 75% of the time, there's always something worthwhile.
Yeah,
and I think really significant, worthwhile.
I think we probably all had that experience where we're talking to somebody and we don't even realize that we're about to impart some wisdom or something that they have never seen, and suddenly, just like out of the mouths of babes, we are able to provide to them something that they were searching for, and they identify it and mirror it back and say, "Oh, Ron, you are." The best at this, or I can't believe the insight you have. You're so good with people, and it's a wonderful feeling when somebody identifies that power in you that maybe you don't even know you have.
Well, for your listeners who are in the 55 to 50 plus range, we've survived for me, I'm on my 60th time around the sun and nothing's got me yet. There's a lot of successes inside that, just still being alive and experiencing everything else. I mean, we actually knew what it was like when I was young, but when people landed on the moon, right? and we knew when telephones were not things in your pockets, right? Like, we knew a lot of how to do a lot of different things that are different today. We've successfully navigated. We have smartphones and we learned how to use them, and we learned computers, and we learned those things weren't around when we were kids. We adapted to those. Everybody else, like younger kids today, they grew up with it. They never had to adapt. It was always there. So there's all that you can say, well, I'm old, I don't have any value. Or you go, no, I've been around a long time. I had a lot of experiences that I could share with people. But you got to open your mouth to actually let the experiences come out and be with somebody so they can hear them. Mm-hmm. So that they can find the gift that you have.
Yeah.
That's just perfect for them.
Yeah. So another spin on that, which I've always been curious about is, and maybe you'll tell me that it fits into this methodology and this will come from it, but I've always been intrigued by the idea of networking with people who, like, we meet, we're having a great conversation. You say, you got to meet this other person, and you meet them and they're like, oh, Ron is so right. That person talking to them gave me energy, gave me inspiration, rather than, oh, Ron turned me on to this guy and what a downer. I left the coffee shop just feeling like I was crap. It fell flat. I don't know if it's me, but he wasn't very spirited either. And I'm just curious whether the techniques, like, always will create, I mean, I'm sure always is probably a big word, but we usually create some kind of walking away feeling inspired by the human condition or by the conversation or by the connection or the vulnerability. Yeah.
Hold on, Paul. So, let's separate the end and go back to the beginning.
Uh-huh.
If I go, hey, Paul, you need to meet Jim. Like, this Jim is, he's got something that's great, and you're the perfect one to talk to him. Now I go to Jim and go, Jim, you got to meet Paul because Paul's great. And I'll say, now both you and Jim get together to talk, and you're both looking for the other good thing in the other person. Uh-huh. And you know, when whatever we look for, it's what we find. If you go into a conversation with somebody, this is a good person, this is a good story, the moment you see it, you'll go, oh, that's it. That's the thing. That's the good thing. And that's our way of being. Like, we created the way of being because we're looking for that space. Now, the same could be true. I'd like you to meet Paul. I'd like you to meet Steve, but he's a jerk. Right? So you're going to meet him.
Good luck with
him. You're not going to like him.
Yeah.
Right? And so, but here he is, right? And I go to Steve and go, Steve, Paul's coming over. It's going to be a waste of your time.
Yeah.
And you guys get together and you go, wow, Ron was right.
Sure.
And it wasn't that Ron was right. It was, are you looking for the other person? Are you being your stand? And are you looking for what is in the other person? And that way of being, the stories we tell ourselves in our head before we go into those conversations shape how we're going to be in that conversation. Mm-hmm. It's not accidental.
And with the people who really do put up the shields and are hard to find the vulnerability and that connection, is there a way to get them to open up, or they're not going to be that open with you?
The dominant strategy, Paul, is real simple. If you see somebody's got their shield up and they're not letting you in, take your most vulnerable story and share it.
Yeah.
Right. Because whatever it is you share, they'll be able to connect to it. Cause whatever you've messed up, they've messed it up too. Now, they may not got in trouble. I mean, I got caught. I mean, all that kind of stuff, but they've gone like, oh, I've been there.
Yeah.
Right. And so, does it always work? No, but anything that works 90% of the time is pretty good to use. And when you share that vulnerable story, now it's hard. I mean, takes courage to go, I don't really know this person. And what do I do here? And I'm going to go in and tell a story of how I look kind of like an idiot. Right. And you do that. And you'll notice they look over there and they go, wow, that took courage to say that. I've been there. I've done that. Shields down.
Right. Yeah.
And now it's like you can really find out who the other person is. Mm-hmm. You can connect at a level that's so much deeper than what you would be able to connect to normally.
Mm-hmm. And then is there a second step here where those connections turn into the network effect? I mean, it's a little different when you're at this age cohort and you're not working on a career, but we're trying to promote to empty nesters and end of career people trying to find hobbies and activities and all the rest.
No, I got it. I'll give you an example that just happened recently. Somebody said, hey, I saw your fence fell down. Oh yeah, it did. You need help with that? No, I'm good. Thanks. Right. And you go, the guy who got offered the help and got turned down, is he going to go back and offer it again? Is he going to try to talk to you again in the future? No.
Right.
Right. So it's that allowing contribution, right? Your fence is down. If you can do it all just perfectly, but somebody offers to help and you let them come in to help and they get to add something to it, like how you put the post in or how you're doing all that stuff, whatever, that simple stuff, simple, simple stuff. You're never going to lose that connection. They're always going to remember that time that together you contributed to each other and created a space to fix simple stuff like a fence. Right. And people do it all the time. They go, oh, I see they're in trouble. Do you need some help? And what do we all do? We all go, no, I'm good. Got it, man. We're good. It's cool.
Born often out of the fact that you're going to owe somebody something, or maybe you're afraid of being abusing them.
Is the problem with being obligated to somebody?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we hate it. We do. We go, oh no, I'll be obligated. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
Right.
What is wrong with being obligated to somebody? What is wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. Somebody has obligated to me and I go, oh, cool. I'm obligated to somebody else. That's cool. All that means is the next time they need help, I'm willing to help them. Well, I want to help them anyway.
Yeah. 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 And there's something at our age that we should start to appreciate is that there is this thing, whether you believe in karma per se, but there is some sort of goodness creating more goodness, that I'm generous with you and you're generous to Bill or what, you know, whatever it is, that does fuel a lot of what goes around, as does bad behavior.
Paul, I remember as a kid, my grandfather was a farmer, Western Kansas, and I was in the combine with him, and we're cutting wheat. No air conditioning. It was hot. It's summertime. And we were on the last field. And I noticed that somebody was coming into the same field and started cutting. Right. And I was going like, hey, Grandpa, I think somebody's stealing your wheat. Right. They're cutting your field. Right. He goes, no, they're done. They're just here to help. I mean, if they don't get it cut that night and you get a hailstorm during a night, the wheat's gone.
Right.
So they just came in and I go, do you pay him for that? And he goes, no.
Yeah.
I've helped him in the past. He's just here helping me, looking for an opportunity to help me back.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here going like, that's a pretty good life.
That used to be a lot more common, I think, in the heartland.
Yeah. Yeah. But well,
we can get that back.
I don't see why we couldn't get that back.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be a great space when you go, when something happens to you, people show up to help.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I have to help them back. So what?
Yeah.
I love that. But we have a story in our heads, right? Name of our podcast, Story in Your Head. We have a story in our head that goes like, obligation bad.
Yeah.
Obligation bad. I don't want to take on anything that I would be obligated to somebody later. And my stand is obligations always come first. You always end up being obligated to somebody before you get help back. And so help them first, and right, and then you get help back. So you take on that obligation.
Mm-hmm. But is there some evolutionary purpose for that feeling of obligation or fear of resentment? Like a lot of the negative voices in our heads are about evolution telling us to be aware of the tiger. But it seems odd that we have this fear of obligation, since early man was a collective animal. You'd think we would be wired more to help each other.
I'm not really an expert on evolution.
Yeah.
But I do know that when people talk about it, we don't have that problem.
Yeah.
When we sit in our own heads quietly and sit in the corner, that's when we come up with the story as obligation is bad.
Hmm.
But when you talk about it, like, oh no, obligation's a good thing. That's why I'm speaking to you and doing all this stuff. It's like, when we talk about obligation is good, like getting it, being obligated is good. Like, that's the beginning of going, oh, wow, it's not a bad thing to be obligated. Then actually, I get a help. Like, I can then, like, they're going to be willing to take my help in return, right? Like, if we open, and now when we start to help each other, the connection's real.
Yeah.
And the connection lasts.
Yeah, I would challenge anybody listening, if you got chills out of the idea of this, that this kind of inspired you to try to embody that feeling and understand that there's a reason why you felt, you know, warm and fuzzy about this kind of conversation, because it is so empowering or positive or generous and good.
Yeah, Paul, I hold it. It's being human.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And being connected to each other and being human, it's a good thing. Yeah. It's a good life.
Yeah.
It's a good life when you have people to be with and can trust. And there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. Life's a roller coaster. But when you're in the seat by yourself, it's scary. When you're in a seat with somebody else, it's not so scary.
Yeah. And that's a really good note to end on, I think, because that's what we're trying to talk about, is how important those connections are, and getting through a lot of things that come later in life. And there's a lot of beauty to be found there, but there will be challenges in being together. It's going to be part of it. Just tell us a little bit on MacklinConnection.com, MacKlin connection.com, what services you offer there for any of our listeners who.
Thanks. We have two sites. MacklinConnection.com is kind of our business site. So businesses mm-hmm. show up there to find out about either hiring a coach or bringing us into your business. And then we have one for individuals, like other fathers and other stuff like that. It's called imaginalcommunity.mn.co. And that's a mighty network site.
Okay.
And you can join up and sign in. You go look at a bunch of articles and stuff. And you can find out about our offers. We have a workshop. Next one's in January. We also have our podcast that's on there, and we have some other courses and smaller stuff you can do that enables you to kind of learn about who we are in spaces. So yeah, it's a great place to go find us at. And when you get in there, just send me a text. Just say, okay. Hey, I heard your podcast on Paul's, and I'd love to talk some more.
Great. Well, we'll put that in the show notes so people can find it. Thank you, Ron, just for making this time. It was really fun having a deep dive into this, because this is really relationships and especially for men, making sure they are not alone as they approach this part of life is really, really key. So again, Paul Banas with greatdad.com. I just launched a course on gratitude, which is a real key part of this too, is being thankful for some of these connections. And you can find that at greatdad.com/gratitude. And for listeners, you can have my $39 course for $1 if you sign up and use the code podcast1. So until next time, keep on being the best dad you can be. Really appreciate it. Bye.